Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
We see her going in and not coming out. Within hours, everybody knew something was wrong, just based on us knowing her so well. I don't think he anticipated that.
Somebody has to know something. Somebody dropped the ball somewhere. But I feel like this isn't one that's unsolvable, you know? I just wish something would give. It's been too long, way too long.
When I started looking at the internet and seeing all the cases of people who are suffering because of the same type of thing, this is horrifying.
On Thursday, October 11th, 2018, 45-year-old Melanie went out with a girlfriend to a nail salon. The friend dropped Melanie off that evening, and surveillance cameras at the Chesapeake Glen Apartments in Glen Burnie, Maryland, captured Melanie walking into the building where she shared an apartment with her boyfriend, Joe. Melanie was never seen exiting the building. However, the cameras didn't capture high-quality images, and they weren't able to see people coming and going after dark. The following day, Melanie's friends tried to reach her and were unsuccessful. Melanie failed to show up for work on Friday evening, which was not like her. By Saturday, her friends were alarmed and decided to report Melanie missing. This was just the beginning of this long nightmare for Melanie's loved ones. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 325 of The Vanished. Melanie's story. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey, and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. Over the course of the past several months, we've spoken to several of Melanie's loved ones about her life and disappearance. Everyone described Melanie as a spitfire who was full of life and love for those around her. It wasn't like Melanie to just disappear. In order to better understand what may have happened to Melanie and why, we're going to start by taking a look at her life. We spoke to Melanie's friend Melissa, who knew her for many, many years. Melissa told us about how they met.
I met Melanie in, we were going into the seventh grade. I just moved into the neighborhood. So I met her the summer of 87, maybe 86 or 87. We were both starting middle school, but it was before school started. I moved to the neighborhood, and then that's how I met her. We had a park just down the street from my house, probably three houses down. And that's where I met her. She's not shy. So we just started talking, and my sister and I were sort of exploring the neighborhood. We got to the park. She was there, and the conversation just kind of started. Like I said, she's very forthcoming. She's very open. It was just from then on. We were together all the time after that. Loved to dance, for sure. Went to all the dances. Just kind of hung out. I had a pool at my house, so we would spend summers at my house.
Melissa and Melanie both had their first children when they were teenagers. This was something that brought them even closer as they grew into their roles as mothers together at a young age.
As we got older, we both had children. We both had babies young. So that sort of, you know, we grew up. We had no choice. I was 16 when I got pregnant with my son and had him at 17. And just right behind me literally, she was probably 17 and probably had her son at 18. We were back to back with that. They made me leave school. She did also leave school. She went to night school where I just kind of picked up my credits as I went. So we didn't, you know, have the whole full school experience just because we both were pregnant and then left. So we both had our first son. We both have one son, but we both had our children very young. You know, we had that in common for sure. I mean, we kind of, our two boys kind of grew up together. We did stuff with them together.
Melissa explained that the relationship between Melanie and her son's father didn't last. But later, Melanie met a man named Greg, and the two shared a wonderful relationship that lasted many years.
Her son, his dad, I didn't actually know him that well. They didn't stay together. She stayed close with his family, you know, via her son. She sort of dated here and there after that. And then she met her second husband. They were married. And then she had her second child, her daughter. They were wonderful together. He was a great guy until she married Greg, who it was hysterical. I didn't know Greg's last name for a long time. And then I found out his last name was Melanie. And so that is her name. Her name was Melanie, spelled differently, but that was her name. Listening to her like customer service phone calls or whatever, they'd ask her name. And just hearing her say Melanie would crack me up for so long. I got over it eventually, but it was pretty funny. Yeah. They were just so much alike. They enjoyed all of the same things. Melanie loves an amusement park, roller coasters, sort of high energy, loved amusement parks. She would take my son with her son before they had Elizabeth. Greg and Melanie would take the boys to like King's Dominion or Great Adventure. They both enjoyed that. And they were just so much alike. Greg is just a very approachable, friendly, easygoing.
Melanie's friends liked Greg, but as the years passed, the two drifted apart, which often happens in relationships.
I think they just kind of grew apart, but they stayed, they maintained a friendship at the very least. And I don't believe they divorced. They separated and they were separated for a long time. When her and her husband split up, that was just like a shocker to me. I was so surprised, but I understood, you know, I'm like, okay, I get it.
We also spoke to Melanie and Greg's daughter, Beth, who told us more about her parents' relationship from her perspective.
From my perspective, it wasn't too terrible. I mean, I know they had their fights and their arguments. There's been times, you know, I've seen arguments between them in front of me, but I've always enjoyed having my mom and dad together because they were so much fun. They separated probably 2012-ish, around Christmas time. I mean, it was pretty rough just because I didn't really understand why. You know, me and my mom ended up having like a falling out when that happened. Eventually, I did come back and, you know, rekindle that relationship with her before, you know, she did disappear. She's a spitfire, a strong person. She doesn't really take no crap from nobody. You can't sway her in any way. She's very stubborn, but she's lovable. On the inside, she's very, very sweet. Very sociable in my eyes. I'm very introverted myself. So from my perspective, she's very, very extroverted. We would always go out to parties when I was young. We'd go to Cinco de Mayo, her friends to have Cinco de Mayo, and just have parties all the time and hang out with all of her friends when I was growing up. And she always just seemed like the life of the party.
We also had the opportunity to speak with another of Melanie's friends, Amy, who was the friend that Melanie had gone to a nail salon with shortly before she disappeared. Amy and Melissa are sisters, and both had long-lasting friendships with Melanie since childhood. Amy told us more about Melanie.
Her and my sister met in junior high school, and she came to the door one day looking for my sister. We got to know each other, and we became friends. Very to the point, like matter-of-fact type person. She would tell you like it is, whether you liked it or not. And that went not just for friends, but family and work and everyone. Very blunt. But she was also very sweet, very loving, loved her children, loved her friends. She'd do anything for you if it was within, you know, her power. I want to say she was the rock of her family, her immediate family. Once her grandparents passed, I don't know if she felt like it fell on her, but she became that person for her mom and her siblings. She was my best friend. I don't recall her ever showing any special interest as far as a career. I know she wanted to be married. I know she wanted to be a mom. But as far as work, it was always just do what you have to do.
Everyone we spoke to expressed that Melanie was never focused on any particular career. She was preoccupied with her family and being a mom. So she worked various jobs throughout the years, from screen printing t-shirts to working as a dispatcher. Another friend we spoke to, Willa, met Melanie in adulthood, and the two became very close.
I met Melanie because her brother was a drummer in my son's father's band. I met her through her brother and her brother's girlfriend at the time. She was just fun, outspoken, wild. She almost scared me. And she was tiny, but she was a sweetheart. She wasn't always, like, she just had the air about her, like, don't mess with me kind of thing.
Me and her actually worked a few jobs together when we first met because we did cleaning together because she worked at Mary Maid's with me. And then we worked at another office contractor that they cleaned nighttime office cleaning. She worked at UPS with me. She's worked for a lot of places. Her main thing she did for a while after her cleaning was screen printing. She could do t-shirts and stuff.
But yeah, she did mostly manual labor type jobs.
By October of 2018, Melanie was working at an Amazon facility with her friend, Amy. She was living at the Chesapeake Glen Apartments in Glen Burnie, Maryland, with her boyfriend of about a year, Joe. On Thursday, October 11th, 2018, Melanie spent much of the day with her friend, Amy. The two spent time at a nail salon together. Afterwards, Melanie went back to her apartment for the evening, and surveillance videos captured her walking inside. Amy and Melanie were very close. Amy told us about her last communication with Melanie on the 11th, and a strange message she received from Melanie's phone on the morning of the 12th.
We text every day, all day, up until going to bed, good night. And so that was probably our last text, was saying good night, because we had spent the day together the day before. And that morning, I got up early, and the day before we had talked about the weather and how it was changing. And so when I got up early that morning, I wrote a comment, something about the weather. And I didn't think anything when she didn't write back right away because it was so early. I figured she's not up yet. But as the day went on, and the response that I got around 9 was an emoji. She doesn't text that way. She wouldn't have sent just an emoji as a response to that text. And so throughout the day, I kept texting and calling, and I was getting nothing.
Something just didn't seem right to Amy. She was close with Melanie, and she knew her habits. This was out of character. Amy just couldn't let it go. She had last seen Melanie on Thursday evening. With still no word from Melanie by Saturday morning, she knew she had to do something.
The next morning, I was going to my fiance's house, and I said, I need to stop. Something's not right, because I called her mother. Her mother hadn't heard from her. And if me and her mother didn't hear from her, I knew something was up, if neither one of us could reach her. And that's when I went by her house, her apartment, and no one answered, but her car was there. So I was confused.
Melanie's son Ryan lived in the same apartment complex as Melanie and Joe, just in a different building. Amy decided to head over to Ryan's apartment to see if he knew anything or had seen Melanie.
So I went over to Ryan's, which was the next building in the same apartment complex. Ryan was her son. And I said, your mother's not answering and her car's here. Something's not right. And so he went over and he banged on the door and we knocked on the neighbor's door and they said they hadn't seen her or heard her. So I told Ryan, we need to call the police. So I called the police and they came and they said, we can take a missing persons report, but it has to be from him, from her son. So it was weird. They asked us to ride to some park that was close and do it there. But I don't want to skip that while we were there with them, Joe came home and we asked him, where is she? And he said, I don't know. I thought she went to get her nails done, which that was a load of crap because she had just gotten her nails done. And they're not open that early in the morning.
The police walked up with him just to walk through the apartment. And they came down and said, no, she's not up there. The one cop, it was a female officer, even made the comment, and her suitcases are still there. That didn't stick out to me till a couple of days later. Melanie doesn't have suitcases. Melanie puts everything in a bin, whether she's moving or whatever. She does not use a suitcase. So then we went to the park and I was answering all the questions.
Keep this comment about the suitcases in mind as we'll circle back to it later in the episode. Things just weren't adding up. Melanie's boyfriend, Joe, was saying that he thought Melanie had gone to get her nails done on Friday morning, which didn't make sense to Amy. She had just been at the nail salon with Melanie on Thursday. Also, Melanie's car was left behind at her apartment. How would she have gotten there? One thing that Melanie's loved ones expressed to us was that Melanie had debilitating back and neck issues, which left her walking with a limp. She wasn't known to walk places due to the pain she struggled with on a daily basis. Joe also mentioned that Melanie took her phone with her and her house key, but not the rest of her keys. Joe claimed that he had texted Melanie on Friday and asked her to pick up some items from the store for him after she was finished getting her nails done. After that, Joe says that he fell asleep watching TV, and when he woke up later, Melanie still wasn't there, and he assumed that she had come home while he was sleeping and gone on to work the night shift at her job. He said he texted her again, and his text messages kept showing up as undelivered, but he never got a response from Melanie and assumed that perhaps there was something wrong with his phone. We know that Melanie never showed up for work on Friday night, but that's where Joe believed that Melanie was. He didn't think it was strange that her car was left behind at the apartment because Melanie needed to replace two tires that were nearly bald, and the two planned to go have the tires replaced on the Sunday after Melanie disappeared. However, as far as we're aware, Joe didn't offer up an explanation for how Melanie would have gotten to work on Friday night without her car. Melanie's friend Melissa told us how she found out that her friend had disappeared.
My daughter, actually, she called me because of Facebook, which I don't have. She said, what's going on with Melanie? She calls her Aunt Melanie, and I'm like, I don't know. What do you mean? What's going on? I don't know. And she's reading kind of on Facebook that it sounds like she's missing. No one can find her. So I'm like, what do you mean? No one can find her. It just didn't make sense. And nothing she was saying was making sense. I got off the phone with her. I knew that Melanie and my sister had gone out and they were getting manicures or pedicures.
Melissa agreed with her sister Amy that the text from Melanie's phone with a single emoji was out of character for Melanie.
Because we know her so well. Like, I know Melanie, my sister knows Melanie so well. My sister texts her good morning and something about the weather because it had been warm. And she said something about how it was so cold. And it was an emoji, like the laughing emoji with the tears, you know, like the laughing heart emoji. And I just thought, that's weird. And because she doesn't do that. She's never just sent an emoji. She would text back or call. Never. I mean, really, that's strange.
Prior to all of this, Melissa had moved out of the area to Delaware. And by Monday, she couldn't just sit at home and wait for news any longer. Melissa made the trip to Maryland to help search for Melanie.
First thing Monday, I drove to Maryland. Went to my sister's, I picked her up, and then we went to her mom's house. No one could find her. It was very fast because, again, it's just Melanie always answers her phone or she gets right back to you. I even looked through my history of messages with her, text message-wise. And never has she responded with an emoji to a question or just nothing like that. There are hearts every now and then at the end of a text, but never just an emoji. And that was so odd. And I totally understood my sister, her concern. I know that I called and texted her constantly after my daughter reached out to me on Sunday. And it was just literally going to voicemail. It was off or dead. And I never ever got her voicemail unless, you know, it rang out and or she would be at work and then it would ring until voicemail. And I've tried to think, you know, have I ever called and just
literally gone straight to voicemail without her putting me right to voicemail and then calling me right back.
Word was beginning to spread on social media that Melanie was missing, causing panic within Melanie's group of girlfriends. Just like Melissa, Willa too learned about Melanie's disappearance when one of her children saw a post on Facebook.
My son came and told me that her son had posted on Facebook that his mom was missing, and please, anybody can somebody, you know, help find her mom. She was already missing like 2 days by the time I heard about it, because I found out on a Sunday. She was last seen on a Thursday night. I knew right there and then something wasn't right. I mean, I felt it.
When Melanie's daughter, Beth, learned that her mother was missing, she rushed over to the apartment.
The day that we filed the missing person report, my brother's girlfriend had been calling me, and I don't really get calls from her. So I answered, and she was like, when was the last time you talked to your mom? And I said, Wednesday. I said, I didn't really talk to her. She was kind of texting me and, you know, that kind of thing. She goes, we can't find her. We think she's missing. And I was like, oh, okay. So I hung up the phone. And from where I was, the apartments that she was at were not even 2-3 minutes away. So I got in the car and I started to drive over there. When I got there, it was just, I barely remember, which is the craziest part. But I got there and the police were there and they were asking everybody questions, you know, who was she to you? What happened? Like, where was she the last 2 days?
This is when Beth noticed a shift in the tone that the police were taking when talking about her mom.
I remember the police officer asking me questions about it, and he was like, was she involved in any drugs? She's in pain management. She can't take anything that's not prescribed, you know, the dosage. She can't do anything like that or else she'll be kicked out. And she really needs that for her back. And he was like, well, she's probably on a drug binge. That's like completely out of the question. And I felt very insulted. So after that, I kind of just got really flustered. I just kind of left and didn't talk to him anymore because I just felt like he wasn't being helpful. And I just started asking everybody questions like, what has brought everybody to this conclusion? And then I found out that she went to get her nails done with my Aunt Amy Thursday night. And then my Aunt Amy dropped her off. And she went into the apartment, and that was the last time anybody saw her. She didn't show up for work on Friday, and everybody was very concerned because she shows up to work all the time. And that's how everybody figured out, like, she's not in the apartment, so where is she? Her car was out front. They were saying some weird stuff about her, took her license and her house key off of her lanyard and left everything else, and it was very strange. Like, that's not my mother. My mother is those people that have those big dangly keychains and you can't ever hear anything but the keychain. And she doesn't just take stuff off or take certain things out of her wallet and leave her wallet. And it was very odd. So then everybody started asking Joe questions and he acted like he didn't even know her. He promised he would show up to the search behind the building. And we all saw him get in his car and drive away. It was insane to me.
While Melanie was known to party in her younger years, she was currently in a pain management program for her chronic pain stemming from the back issues she struggled with for so many years. It's common for doctors to drug test patients who are in pain management programs in order to ensure that the patient is using the medications as prescribed and not taking substances that aren't prescribed to them. Where was this information coming from about Melanie? Melanie's friend Willa told us more about this and why she thinks that this derailed the investigation early on.
Joe was basically bad-mouthing Melanie and making her sound like a druggy runaway. Seemed like the cop was kind of on his side at that point. So they didn't take anything seriously because Melanie doesn't do that. Like all those disappearing acts everybody accuses her of. Even when she would go off and just do something on her own, she stayed in contact with certain people. She like never went off grid and just, you don't know where she was at. That never happened. She was close with her mom. She always talked to her mom no matter what. And Joe's trying to, like, portray this woman who runs away, drug addict, you know what I mean? Like, hides out, like, I'm like, really?
Beth explained that since Melanie disappeared, Joe has distanced himself from Melanie, the woman he once claimed to have loved. This all seems strange to her.
So he's been very vague. And like I said, just acted like he had no clue who she was. And he's been derogatory towards her, texted my friend Alexia on Facebook saying terrible things about my mother.
saying he never proposed to her, all these things. So it was pretty crazy because I remember the Christmas before she went missing, she showed me the ring on her finger. He said he never tried to marry her, though. It was very, very weird. Like, he was very sketchy after that.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. From the very beginning, Melanie's friends had their suspicions about Melanie's boyfriend, Joe. Melanie was last seen going into her apartment building, but never seen leaving. And Joe had made statements to the police that shifted their focus of the investigation from looking for Melanie to assuming that she was off on a drug binge. Melanie's friends and family had other reasons to be suspicious of Joe, too. Willa told us that something seemed off with Joe from the very first time that she met him.
The first time I met him was actually she brought him to my Thanksgiving. I had a little Thanksgiving thing for my friends, and he just sat there real quiet. He was real quiet. Melanie told me before I met him, she's like, dude, he's really nice. He treats me like my dad did. Speaking of her grandfather, that's pretty serious that she compared him to her grandfather because, I mean, he must have really been playing that part at first, you know? But he did come across as weird and dark and quiet. You know, I'm a chatterbox. I was still trying to talk to him anyways. He said something like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of a quiet person. I don't talk that much. But so I didn't really have any good conversation with him, really, because he just sat there and listened to us talk. I just trust what Melanie thought. You know what I mean? She liked him. I thought, okay, whatever. Just not full of sunlight, that's for sure. Not full of light, not full of brightness. Just a dark, quiet, inward type person.
Melissa got a similar vibe from Joe from the one and only time that she ever encountered him.
She was only with him for just over a year. It could be a little longer, but I don't think so. I only ever met him the one time. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I didn't really have the opportunity to ask. Just briefly, she was here at my house with my sister, and I talked to her just a little bit about him because I didn't understand it. And she didn't really... It was kind of like, yeah, I know. They were living in an apartment together, which is actually where the last place she was. And at that point, it had been a few months since I'd talked to her specifically, like literally, you know, very specifically asking, what is it? Like, I don't get it. We'd meet at Cracker Barrel with my sister it's sort of halfway, and talk, but not so much about our personal, like just, we just meet and eat and talk and hang out for a little while. So I don't know a lot about him. I've learned a lot about him since, but prior to that, I didn't know a lot. I know that she met him on dating website or dating online site, which that was my surprise when I learned that. I don't have Facebook, so I don't connect to friends that way. She did meet him on Plenty of Fish, I'm pretty sure, because I'd never heard of it before. And she didn't say Plenty of Fish. She used like the acronym POF or whatever. And I didn't know what it was. I'm like, why? Are you kidding me? Why would you need to meet somebody that way? Because she's beautiful and she's funny and she's fun. And I just didn't understand it. I met him and I try really hard not to judge immediately, but I kind of do in my head, like I kind of do to myself. I can read some things, and he was very, not unapproachable, but he didn't seem interested in more than just sort of a very neutral kind of conversation. And I thought that was odd, just the way he was not talking. And he's older than us. I know her mom had a dislike of him almost immediately. I can't say I disliked him. I didn't get the vibe that he was interested in sharing more than just like general, not even information. He was very, just not interested in talking at all. And it was very short. Again, I learned very little about him in the one and only time that I met him. And he was so just so not like her and the way she is. It just seemed odd that they were together, like, you know, as a couple. No one that I had known Melanie with was like this guy. It was strange for me, but again, I only met him the one time, and so I didn't have a strong opinion based on the way he looked, the way he acted, just didn't seem like a match to me based on her history of dating or even like marrying or whatever. It just didn't seem like her.
Everyone seemed confused about why Melanie was dating Joe. As Melissa mentioned, they didn't seem like a good match. And Joe wasn't like the other men that Melanie had been in relationships with previously. Beth also had a weird feeling about Joe when she met him, but she was trying to give him a chance because she wanted her mom to be happy.
She was in a relationship with this guy, Joe. I think it was like an on and off thing for about a year before she went missing. I didn't really know too much. I met him a couple of times. I was kind of weird about him. I just kind of felt creeped out, but if it was what my mother wanted, then that was fine with me, you know, as long as she was happy. And that's really the first relationship she had been in since my parents separated and everything like that. I really just felt like I should give him a shot. But then with the way everything ended up going, it was very regretful. And I felt very guilty about not speaking my feelings about things and being honest.
Maybe Joe was just quiet and reserved, perhaps misunderstood. But throughout the course of their relationship, Melanie had occasionally confided in her friends about some of Joe's behaviors that seemed to be red flags to them. Willa told us about a disturbing event that occurred on the New Year's Eve prior to Melanie's disappearance.
She was in the previous months complaining about him, not so much to me as she was to other people. Because I was like, why don't you get rid of that guy? He's a douchebag. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like him. After she started saying, like, some of the things he was doing, like, they broke up one time because he did something embarrassing in front of her and her mom and her niece. And when she had him over for New Year's Eve, so she left him and forgot to take her cat ashes because her cat had just passed away. And he sent her a video of him dumping the ashes on the floor while he stomped on him. I mean, what kind of person would do something like that? And that was because the reason she left him that first time, that he was very jealous that she had them over for New Year's Eve, her niece and her mother. He was being an asshole, basically, because they were there. And then Melanie's mother woke up to hear clinking noises out in the living room, and she walks out, and he's pulling off the light, the bulbs and the things off their Christmas tree and just letting them drop to the floor one by one. Kind of weird. And then she said that they argued all night, when Melanie went to bed. She said he went to bed before the New Year's happened. When Melanie finally went to bed with him, he started arguing with her about how they were being loud and just cussing and cursing, and she was telling him to stop talking so loud because her mother's there and all this type of thing. It doesn't sound normal to me.
After the incident on New Year's Eve, Melanie and Joe broke up. Melanie told Amy some of what had occurred, but she kept other things from Amy as well. In hindsight, Amy realizes today that she didn't have a clear picture of what was going on behind closed doors.
He didn't seem to be a very social person. I don't think it was like the normal nervous of meeting someone new, or he was just odd. He was sarcastic in the way that they spoke to each other. You know, she had told me some stuff, but she didn't tell me all because it was a hard decision for her on whether or not she was going to give him a chance again. And what she told me, I thought maybe he deserves a second chance, but she didn't tell me all, or I would have absolutely said no way. She kept that part to herself because had she told me that, I would have absolutely no way. And I think she was probably embarrassed to tell me that because Melanie was a fighter. She had told me that, I absolutely would have discouraged.
Melanie decided to give Joe another chance after he promised to seek help and change. But Willa told us that things continued to escalate in the months prior to Melanie's disappearance.
He was asking her to come back. He'd go to therapy, blah, blah, blah. He was going to try to make himself better. And that's why how he kept getting her to come back, because she left him at least 3 times. And then finally, from what I heard from Melanie, she told me that they had to move out because they were living above his brother's wife's company in Curtis Bay, Baltimore. I guess his brother's wife wanted them to leave because they were bringing the police there because they would argue. And the place had gates that could lock, and he would lock Melanie in there so she couldn't leave. It had like big gates that you couldn't like drive through or nothing. He did that at least a couple of times that Melanie told me. She told me another time. She stopped telling me stuff, but she did tell me a few things. She told me one time he tried to choke her to death because they got in an argument because she hung her bra over the side to dry. And because the house they were living in was over top of a machine trucking company, they repair old trucks and stuff. Anyways, he would accuse her of hanging her bras out for the guys in the shop to see or something like that. And they got in a fight. He tried to choke her out. And I think she ended up having to like kick him in the balls to get him off of her.
After this time, Melanie and Joe moved to the apartment that Melanie ultimately disappeared from. Melissa believes that in the lead up to Melanie going missing, that she was ready to move on and was just waiting for the right opportunity to leave Joe.
Probably September. Before she went missing, she was just there. They were living together for just, it was rent, you know, it was cheap. And she was kind of waiting it out until she had somewhere else to go. So it wasn't like they were super happy, or it was just kind of tolerating the situation until she could get somewhere else. Just waiting it out.
Melanie's family and friends all seemed to dislike Joe, but they didn't know the full story before she went missing. Melanie had told different friends and family members bits of stories about Joe's actions. But it wasn't until Melanie was gone that they began to compare notes and a clear picture started to emerge. A picture that made them fear for what may have happened to Melanie after she returned home on the evening of October 11th, 2018.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Ten days after Melanie disappeared, someone walking their dog found a human leg along the banks of Marley Creek, several miles away from Melanie's apartment. Media reports only stated that partial human remains were found, and investigators did go out to the area, where they conducted both land and water searches to find more human remains, though their attempts were unsuccessful. Melanie's loved ones were mostly in the dark about this for a period of several months. Melanie had tattoos on both legs, and they assumed that investigators would have told them if they thought that this was Melanie's leg, based on matching her tattoos. However, investigators waited on DNA confirmation, and it was, in fact, Melanie's leg that had been recovered just days after she disappeared. Melissa told us about the day that they learned this devastating news.
After her leg, you know, once that was found, it wasn't confirmed as hers, but, and really none of us thought anything of it, really. We just knew that something was found. And there was a, like, sort of a candlelight vigil very shortly after her going missing. I went back to her mom's house and stayed there for a little while. She didn't go to the vigil again. She's very sort of kind of keeps to herself private. And I told her I'd be over after. I went over. And I was in there for, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20 minutes before she said, police came by while you were at the vigil or whatever. And they took DNA from her. And I said, for what? I mean, exactly. I kind of figured I knew, but she said, just, you know, and also we didn't know what they had found. We just knew it was a body part. We didn't know what or anything like that. But she was really upset about that. And that was probably in November. She went missing in October, and it was January. Her mom texted me a purple heart, which Melanie loves hearts and she loves the color purple and butterflies. She texted me a purple heart and she said, remember how much you guys like the snow. And I thought that was, you know, what is she talking? And it was snowing. I mean, it did snow. It was the first snow. We used to go sledding at the park in our neighborhood and both get super excited when it snowed. Before I even got a chance to text her back, my sister called me and said, have you talked to Ms. Bridget? I said, no, I just got a text. And she said, I got a text too, but they confirmed that the body part is Melanie's. So it took that long for the DNA to match or for them to match it. And I thought, okay, so that makes sense why she's calling me. So I called her and you don't have to say it out loud. Amy already told me you don't have to say it again. It's just like two different levels of thinking though, like taking a life. Okay, that's one thing. But then chopping it up or dismembering is a whole other level of the psychopathy. And that is, I don't know.
For Melanie's friend, Amy, she was disturbed by Joe's lack of interest in looking for Melanie, even after learning that her leg had been found. He didn't seem interested.
When they found, you know, a piece of her limb in Marley Creek, I can tell you, Joe, he didn't ask about her. He didn't offer up any information. He didn't volunteer to help find her. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We had a candlelight vigil, and again, nothing with him. There was a slight, like, through messenger between me and him. Even though I suspected him, I tried to keep it cool. I don't want him to think I'm blaming him in any way. It wasn't that much longer. I want to say a week, if that. He knew that he was being blamed. He suspected and said something about suing some of us for slander. That's what he threatened. And so at that point, he basically kind of called my bluff, not in so many words directly at me, but at me and the group of her friends and family.
Melanie's daughter, Beth, was frustrated by the amount of time that it took to identify her mother's leg. They had supplied investigators with photos of Melanie's tattoos, with the hope that they could speed up the process.
It was on the news. They didn't have, like, an ID or anything, but they did mention a leg being found in Marley Creek. I think it was, like, 3 months later or something, they finally ID'd it to be my mother, which is kind of crap because she's got tattoos on both of her legs. And I know they said there was weather damage and stuff, but for a while that was messing me up because I was like, you found it 10 days after, and then it took 3 months after that to figure out who it was. That was the biggest break we've had in the case the whole time, and nothing really happened. But that was the only thing that has happened in the case ever since it happened. I mean, they've tried to search the same creek with deep divers and stuff after, but they said they haven't found anything.
One reason that this has been such a large source of frustration is that it delayed searches of Melanie and Joe's apartment for months. Willa told us more.
According to neighbors that live downstairs from them, Melanie and Joe, they didn't search the apartment for forensics until they figured out the leg was Melanie's in January, and that was way after the fact when somebody else lived there. Coroner answered questions to one of my friends when she called, was very open about the parts that they found and said that it was sawed off. It was removed. It's still missing persons, but they're treating it as a homicide.
Willa told us more about the area where Melanie's leg was found and her own searches in that vicinity.
Because Melanie had, the day before she went missing, went with her girlfriend to a nail salon. And the nail salon's, like, really close to that area. And another thing I want to add is that's his childhood neighborhood. He lived there all his life until, like, I want to guess, like, 2012 or something. So he knows the ins and outs of that place. It's like a little peninsula in Glen Burnie called Point Pleasant. When they found the body part, me and one of Melanie's girlfriends decided we were going to try to walk as much of that waterway as we could. It's kind of hard because there's, like, pussy willows growing and a bunch of grassy stuff. That you know what I mean? It's all marshy. So we couldn't, like, walk all the way around, just keep walking. Yes. And then there's people have their property. You don't want to walk on people's property and stuff like that. But we were looking and we came across these people who were living. It was like a cluster of houses. It's like this big parking lot. And imagine there's a whole bunch of houses going around the parking lot. And that bar that's not open no more. And it's got like a pier off of it. And it has like a boat launch off of it. We were just walking around that area. And these people, I asked them if they had seen anything suspicious. It was 2 weeks after it happened. We met these people. And I asked them if they had seen anything suspicious. And they said they had. And I was like, really? And they were like, yeah. But they saw a vehicle matching Joe's. And I didn't give them any ideas. I just told them to tell me what they saw. But they described a vehicle to me that sounded like Joe's, and then another vehicle, like a big F-150 pickup truck that was like backed up to the boat launch. And they were like mad because people, for some reason, because they're the only people living there, all the other houses are abandoned or were not, like, being worked on. People just choose that little area to, like, go smoke joints or have beers or whatever, you know what I mean? Just hang out in the parking lot. And it would make them mad because it's like they're where they live. So they thought it was that. So they started searching for whoever owned the vehicles and they could never find anybody. So they went to bed. And when they woke up the next morning, those vehicles were gone. And to me, Joe's family living area, when they lived there, was like what? Like maybe 5 blocks down the road from that, off the same body of water. And that's where they found her body part, like right around that whole area. Like it's all like together. You know what I mean? We could never prove it was him, but it was right there at the right time. And believe me, the cops searched that area too, by the way. He told me 40 square miles of water. They searched that water 3 times extensively. And I'm not a detective. I have no idea. But I'm thinking somebody just purposely put the part where he put it so somebody would find it so that it would look like suspicious, knowing that she just got her nails done very close to the same area. Maybe you could make it out to be she did something around the nail salon and then that was her demise right there. Maybe.
the other side. It's really hard to get there with a car. I walked through those woods. I seen what they were like. It would be a perfect place to leave somebody because there's nobody back there. But it's a really big area of woods, really like untouched by regular people.
Earlier, Amy mentioned that on the day that they reported Melanie missing, that the officers went up to the apartment and came back down and reported that Melanie wasn't up there. One of the officers made a remark about her suitcases being left behind. Later, Amy got to thinking about it, and it was odd, because Melanie never traveled with suitcases, but Joe had owned some. Amy went through her phone and found a video that she had recorded from inside Melanie's apartment before she disappeared, and she spotted a large suitcase that is now missing. Willa told us more about this.
Melanie owned no suitcases. When she traveled, she put totes together. She would use plastic totes to travel. When she go camping, all her stuff was in totes. She didn't use suitcases, really. But he had all the suitcases in that house. But Amy, she's got a video of being over at Mel's house with her granddaughter. And you can see in the background in the video this big, huge suitcase up against the couch. From what we've heard from police, that suitcase was not there anymore. And the police that went up to search the apartment when they made the missing persons report came down saying there was suitcases like scattered around. So to me, he took out little suitcases out of a big suitcase that he could use to take something out of the apartment because she was never seen leaving her apartment. They saw on video, there's a security video, an old crappy video camera facing towards the parking lot in front of her building, and they saw her go in. But the police said they could never tell if she came back out because at nighttime, there's no night vision. It's kind of grainy. But they didn't see her car leave either. So she didn't leave that apartment on 2 feet.
For Melissa, she swears that she had also seen this large suitcase inside the apartment.
My sister was there and her son was there when they did the walkthrough. They wouldn't let them in. And Joe was there. He didn't say, oh, come on in, guys, that which I thought was weird. One of the things my sister told me, the officer had mentioned all of her suitcases are still here. I mean, the first thing I'm like, Melanie, what suitcases? It was one of the pet peeves I had with her was anywhere we went and her moving or vacation, everything was sort of like duffel bag. She didn't have any suitcases. She'd use really anything, but I don't know what her thing was. It used to drive me crazy. So that's why I asked what her suitcases are still there. Like what I didn't understand what that meant. I remember in her apartment, and I'm sure you probably do the same thing. And most people do. It's like the Russian doll, right? The suitcases. And they sort of just all go in. I remember, and thankfully, months later, we found my sister has a video on her phone of the suitcase. It was a huge suitcase, bigger than mine. And I have some pretty big, again, Russian doll situation. Pretty big. It's bigger than that. It was huge. And this is a little apartment. So it's not like, you know, you couldn't see it. It wasn't noticeable. I know I saw it and it's gone. He says he never had it, whatever. And no, it's never been found. He says he never had it. Months and months later, my sister has video of her granddaughter, my sister playing in Melanie's apartment. They hadn't been there that long. I don't think they just moved in, but my sister was using her phone and videoing Callie playing, and I'm watching, and there's the fucking suitcase. It's right there. It's right next to the couch, and I'm like freaking out about it, having to rewind it, pause it. There, it's right there, and I was so just beside myself when I saw it. I'm like, I knew it, and it's in the same spot that I saw it. I was only in there for, I would say 20 minutes tops, maybe even that long. It was just sort of very, it's a small apartment. It was a very brief kind of tour, not even, but I knew that I remember it's just one of those things that just stuck out in my head because it was so big. And then I'm flashing back to my sister saying when they did a welfare check, her suitcases are still there. Well, in order to get that, you have to get all the other suitcases out of it, right? She never left. She's never seen leaving. Her car was there. And I think the only thing over time that we saw or found out was maybe missing her phone, her house key, or her apartment door key. Her keys were there, but that key was gone. Her backpack, it was a backpack purse. I mean, everything was there. Just those couple of things weren't. And it just didn't make sense. She was also at the time, and probably for who knows how long before that, but just recently, she'd been seeing a chiropractor a doctor because of her back and I think her neck. She's been suffering with that forever. And just the idea of her walking anywhere just seems, it's not preposterous to think that she would walk somewhere. But why would she? Her car's right there. And where would she walk to? Who leaves and walks anywhere when their car's right there and she is having back pain? She's literally, she's seen going in and she's never come out.
Willa also remembers that right before Melanie disappeared, she saw her one last time and she was complaining about her back and a procedure she had just gotten done. Willa doesn't think that Melanie would have just walked away from her apartment on her own.
The last time I ever saw her, she came by my house to drop off a cup that she borrowed from me, and she was sitting on my porch. We were talking. She had just gotten some kind of shot put in her back. I don't remember what kind of shot it was, like to make the pain, like to kill the pain off. She said, I'd rather have the pain in my back. She said, that shot was awful. I'll never do it again. Melanie had kind of a limp because Melanie had a messed up back. And she was getting lots of procedures done on it, like recently.
Another thing that Melanie's loved ones thought was odd was that about a month after Melanie disappeared, Joe moved out of the apartment that the two shared. At that time, he asked Melanie's mom to come pick up her things. What wasn't missing from Melanie's belongings seemed strange to her.
Her mom had to come pick up all her stuff when he moved out. He moved out almost exactly a month later. And left all her stuff for Melanie's mom to get. And none of her shoes or anything was missing either. So you're telling me in October, when at that time it was kind of cold out, that she went walking around and left her place with no shoes? She said that the police said that everything was there except for her her identification card and her house key. Melanie, like her daughter told you before, she's one of those people that had like a lanyard and all these millions of freaking keys, and they were loud and you hear her coming. Like, she didn't separate her keys. She would never take her house key off and leave the rest of them at the house. That's just totally out of character for her. The police said the last cell tower her phone pinged was near her apartment.
If Melanie walked out of her apartment to go somewhere the night she disappeared, the only things missing are her phone, a single key, and her ID. Where would Melanie have gone barefoot on that October evening? And how did her leg end up in a creek several miles away? To those who knew Melanie best, they're suspicious of the fact that she was seen entering her apartment but not leaving. However, we have to point out that while Melanie isn't seen exiting her apartment, the video quality is poor at night, and it's possible that she could have exited during the nighttime hours and not been seen. We also have to acknowledge that as far as we're aware, Joe isn't seen exiting with a large suitcase either. However, there are other exit points from the apartment building that aren't on camera. Amy mentioned that Joe never seemed interested in looking for Melanie, and Melissa told us that he seemed to discourage them from spreading the word throughout the neighborhood that she was missing.
Well, we did missing persons flyers and on his street, and the detective called and said that I couldn't do that. I'm like, well, how do you know it was me? kind of thing. He said, well, because we got a call and we put a bunch on his street, and it pissed him off to the point where he called to say that we were harassing him. And, you know, anyway, the detective, he was super cool. He's just like, just don't do that again. And I understand, blah, blah, blah. But he didn't want those posters there. Well, Joe didn't. We were putting him on his street, and I was asking neighbors about cameras, you know, was his backyard at all visible? And this was, again, probably within the first couple of weeks. It was very fresh. I would give them my number even. Just call me if you're watching some past camera footage. I mean, I have cameras here at my house, and I can look back at certain times. And if they can, this is the time that we're thinking. Like, if you saw anything that you think is strange or worth mentioning, Joe had a huge problem with it.
After Melanie disappeared, Joe seemed to move on rather quickly to a new relationship, and those close to Melanie worried for this new woman in his life. Melanie's daughter Beth told us how she and a friend tried to intervene.
There was a time period, I think it was 3 months after she disappeared, he got a new fiance, 2 months. And immediately me and my friend Alexia, who actually knew my mother when we were very, very, very young, me and her messaged her immediately and were trying to warn her, like, hey, this guy's no good, and now you guys are already fiancés. And she was completely thrown off and took us the wrong way, and we're trying to say that we were trying to ruin her family and all this kind of stuff. Eventually, the cops made it up there, and she talked to the cops, and they explained to her what had been going on with him and how he was involved in some other things, and mentioned my mom's case. And she messaged us back and said she was sorry and all that kind of stuff.
Willa explained to us that she and others have done some of their own digging into Joe's life and past, and they found some things that alarmed them.
His previous relationship before Melanie, they were married for 1 year, and now she has a peace order against them. And I hired a private detective when all this first started, and a private detective interviewed her, and she was terrified to even talk to the lady that called her. She was that he was a horrible person, and she didn't want nothing to do with it. She sounded pretty scared. Everybody we talk to that has something to do with this guy are terrified. Melanie, it seems like the girls he's with in the past seem to be more, and even a new one that he was dating, just seem to be more passive type people. It just seemed like he likes passive women, and Melanie might have appeared like that at some points, but she is not like that. If he made her mad, she was going to get real spicy.
Also, she told her mom that she was looking at his background and stuff, too. That's another thing that was going on before she disappeared. And I'm wondering if she knew something about him.
For Amy, she's very frustrated at this point in the investigation into what happened to her friend. Melanie's case is still classified as a missing persons case, despite the fact that her leg was found just 10 days after she disappeared. Melanie's friends and family feel like there should have been more done to find answers from the very beginning.
It disgusts me that nothing else has been found. Nothing. And she's so considered missing. It's not considered a homicide because they haven't found the rest of her. And you hear of cases being won without having a body. And I truly believe one of the detectives really made some mistakes. I believe it was the first or second detective that was on it. And I was brought in for questioning just a couple days after we reported her to, I guess they wanted more details, which was fine. I told them everything that I could. I showed them all the messages. I let them make copies of the messages, and just nothing.
It's been more than 3 years since Melanie disappeared, and her close friends and family members continue to struggle with her absence and lack of answers as to what happened to her. They thought that identifying her leg would have been the starting point for some movement in her case, but that hasn't proven to be true. What we do know about Melanie's disappearance is that she was last spotted walking into her apartment building on the evening of Thursday, October 11th. The following day, her friend Amy was texting and calling, but she only received an emoji as a response, which was out of character for Melanie. By the next day, Amy was really concerned and went to Melanie's apartment, but got no response when she knocked at the door. And she noticed that Melanie's car was still parked outside. She went over to Melanie's son's apartment, and the two reported Melanie missing together. Melanie's boyfriend Joe has claimed that he believed that Melanie left to get her nails done on Friday morning, the 12th. He said he texted her after that time, and the messages showed that they were not delivered. He said that he fell asleep and later awoke and assumed that Melanie had gone to work that evening. But we know that Melanie never made it to her workplace, and her vehicle was left behind at the apartment. Most of Melanie's belongings were also left behind at the apartment, including her backpack-style purse, her keys, except for one key that was removed from the ring, and her shoes. Her ID, phone, and apartment key have never been found. Melanie was seen on surveillance entering her apartment, but never leaving. However, the video quality after dark was not good enough to see if she could have left during the nighttime hours. Investigators told Melanie's family that her phone last pinged in the area of her apartment. Melanie's friends also noticed that there was a large suitcase missing that had belonged to her boyfriend. He claimed that it didn't exist, but Amy later found a video with the suitcase in the background. According to those close to Melanie, that suitcase has also never been recovered. It remains unclear if Melanie left and was never captured on video, or if something else happened inside her apartment. 10 days after Melanie disappeared, her leg was found in a creek several miles away. It would be several more months before the partial remains were identified. After the identification, investigators searched the apartment, but Joe had since moved away and new tenants had moved in. We don't know if they found any evidence within the apartment. We contacted the Anne Arundel County Police Department to request an interview and records. However, we never received any response. We know that many searches were conducted in the area where Melanie's leg was found, but they never found any other traces of her. Suspicions have focused mostly on Melanie's boyfriend, Joe, since the very beginning. There were many red flags throughout their relationship prior to her disappearance, and his behavior afterwards has only deepened those suspicions. But as far as anyone is aware, there is no solid physical proof that Joe is responsible for what happened to Melanie. Today, Melanie's family is left with the same list of questions they had in 2018, and they don't feel like they've gotten the answers that they so desperately need and the justice that Melanie deserves. If you have any information about the disappearance and death of Melanie, please contact the Anne Arundel County Police Department at 410-222-4731, or you can leave an anonymous tip at 410-222-4700.
It just seemed like Joe just slipped right through their fingers. Nobody was watching him. He definitely gave his like weird side of the story, which was basically he was sleeping through everything and he didn't know if she was coming or going.
It feels like they just treat Melanie like she's not important.
For a while now, we've been sitting here nibbling and dabbling with reasonings of what could be, and I really just don't have a good feeling about Joe. That's just how I feel about it. I feel like he's just kind of creepy, and I feel like there's some things that aren't being said. Feeling like living behind the curtain.
I mean, I feel like Joe has something to do with it, but I have no facts. I don't have any evidence.
Her birthday, we get together. It's been three birthdays. That's when we kind of catch up on what, if anything's new. And I feel like this time it was nothing new.
That brings us to the end of episode 325. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be sharing a new story from Texas. Thanks for listening.
Find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.